Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Hi, I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream my show live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Good morning. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. On Wednesdays, I focus on wellness. And today, I'm taking a look at where we are as a state in the fight against COVID-19 and how one group of Minnesotans has been hit particularly hard. Even as Minnesota emerges from the pandemic, the worry and grief of the last year will linger for many in the tight-knit Hmong community. Beloved elders who survived the refugee experience and the start of a new life in Minnesota were lost to the virus. Community leaders battled misinformation. And the strong tradition of Hmong communal life, including extended family activities and big funerals, came into direct conflict with the need to socially distance to be safe from the virus. This hour, I'm exploring some of the cultural and economic reasons the virus took such a toll in the Hmong community and recent efforts to encourage vaccinations. And I want to hear from you, too. How is the pandemic not over for you? Does worry and grief still affect your family, your community, and how? We especially want to hear from our Hmong listeners today. The phone lines are open. Call us at 651-227-6000. Again, 651-227-6000. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. First, let's get an update on COVID-19 cases and vaccinations in Minnesota from NPR News senior reporter Catherine Richard. She's joining us from Rochester for a few minutes to get us up to speed. Good morning to you, Catherine.
Good morning, Angela.
Wow, we've been on quite a journey, haven't we, Catherine?
We sure have.
Yes. Right. Well, I love checking in with you because I know you watch all of the latest information from the health department very closely. So, you know, I think it can be described that the pandemic is easing. We don't know for sure what's around the corner, but for right now, cases do seem to be down significantly and the vaccinations are up. So what can you tell us about the cases right now?
Right. So the timing of your show couldn't be better because right before we go on, they release the numbers for the day. So we're looking at 150 newly reported cases, an additional 8 deaths. You know, hospitalizations are down. Certainly cases are down. One thing I'm really interested in is we've been, you know, still seeing like 8 to 10 deaths every day for weeks. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily square with the other trends we're seeing, which are all, you know, sort of these pretty precipitous drops in cases and hospitalizations. So that's something I'm like just interested in as a reporter, trying to sort that out.
Yeah. And it is important to remind people that people are still getting COVID. There are still new cases, right? So we still have to keep some of these rules in mind.
And part of that is because people, not everyone's vaccinated, right? So if you haven't been vaccinated, you might get a very severe case of COVID. Also, we see a handful of breakthrough cases. So these are people who got vaccinated, but still got very sick. And we're also seeing the cases in hospital younger. So these are people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, not the very older folks who we were really driving trends in deaths and hospitalizations earlier in the pandemic.
So what about the vaccinations? Are we on pace to hit Governor Walz's goal of getting 70% of Minnesotans vaccinated by July 1st?
We are not. You know, right now we're at 65% of Minnesotans 16 and older vaccinated. It's been stuck there for quite a few days. And talking to our data reporter, David Montgomery, this morning, he predicts that at this rate that we're going, it will be the end of July before we hit that 70% mark. And that's, of course, if the, you know, vaccination rates don't fall even farther. So this is just a snapshot in time. But right now, we're not on pace to meet that goal.
And what's the significance of 70%? Why is that the goal?
Well, you know, there's this concept of herd immunity, which increasingly you hear epidemiologists and experts say isn't really necessarily where we're going to be. But 70% is sort of, you know, not only just in Minnesota, the goal, but also at the federal level. We hear President Joe Biden talk a lot about that 70% of people vaccinated. And it's considered to be a number where you've got enough people vaccinated that you might be offering more protection to the community as a whole. You know, nothing set in stone there, but that's just sort of the safest number that they could come up with, the most reasonable one, I would say.
So here we are in June. The school year is ending. Families are planning summer vacations. What can you tell us about just the effort to get teenagers and younger children vaccinated? Because we're seeing more kids now with the vaccine.
Yeah, you know, this is such a great question, and it's something that my reporting has led me to in these last few weeks. You know, about 10 days ago, I was in a high school gym in Austin, Minnesota, where they were hosting a vaccine clinic, right? So it was like kids could just leave class, go get their vaccine, their parents could come with them, and then go back to class. So I think they're trying to make it as easy as possible, because this is the group where we still continue to see community spread, but also has been kind of last in line to get it, you know, and then after that, we're going to see even the younger kids get vaccinated. So I'm seeing a lot of initiatives that are just really meeting those teenagers where they are to get those shots.
So you say the latest numbers from the state show 150 new cases. COVID is still spreading. So what do we know about the specific communities that it's spreading and who is still getting it? I mean, we mentioned the young people, but anything more you can tell us about who seems to be getting it?
Yeah, you know, it's still continuing to spread in communities of color where vaccination rates have been lower, which I'm sure you'll be talking more about in this hour, but also in parts of the state where there are just low vaccination rates in general. You know, just looking at the map here, it looks like Isanti County and Kennebec County continue to have, you know, notably lower vaccination rates compared to the rest of the state. So that's really where we're seeing it circulate, in pockets of the state. Where I am in Olmsted County, we have, you know, upwards of 80% of our population vaccinated, between 70 and 80%. So, you know, in my little pocket of the world, you know, things are looking, you know, quite good. But it kind of just depends on where you are right now.
And just personally, you know, you and your family, you live there in Rochester. What are you seeing as you run errands and you're out with your kids and your husband? Are people wearing masks sometimes when they go into businesses, or how is that working out? Because I see a lot of masks off now because they're not required. But sometimes when you go in stores, people do, or restaurants, people do have masks on. What are you seeing?
Yeah. So great question. I have been surprised to see as many people still wearing masks as they are. I think more so than other communities, you have a lot of medical professionals here. So continuing to wear a mask might be something they're more comfortable with. Certainly people are not masking like they used to. And that is certainly the case. I think a lot of people just that I talk to here have kids who have not been vaccinated yet. And until that happens, they're going to continue to wear a mask, both to protect their kids from getting the virus, but also to model the behavior that they want their kids to engage in. So in my world, that's a lot of what I see.
And you used a term, you said breakthrough cases still. So folks who maybe have had one dose of the vaccine and not the second have gotten it?
Actually, no. Breakthrough cases are defined as people who have been completely finished their vaccine dose, fully vaccinated. So they're 2 weeks out from their second dose or that single dose of J&J, and they have still gotten it. You know, we see very few deaths and hospitalizations stemming from those very few cases that happen. Usually these are much more mild cases. They might even have it and not know it. But they are still potential data, potential points where the virus could spread unintentionally.
So if we look back over the last year, does it seem like the experience is different now for people who fall ill with COVID compared to when, you know, it first started? Now that we're kind of emerging from it, does it seem to be harder for patients and for families now that the rest of the world seems to sort of be moving on?
Yeah, you know, this is actually something I'm exploring in my reporting right now. It feels like we're so close to being not at the end, but at a place that resembles something like post-pandemic. And I really feel for these families who have someone hospitalized right now or have had a death, you know, even just in the last few weeks. It feels like we're so close. You know, and I will say too, just some of the other trends we're seeing in hospitalizations and illness, two things have really changed. One is that hospitals have a much better idea of how to help these patients than they did just a year ago. So the medicine has gotten a lot better, which means people are more likely to live longer, or if they're hospitalized, maybe hold on longer than they would have otherwise. Now, if you are someone who's had COVID and has some of these long COVID symptoms, the other thing that you have access to that you wouldn't have had access to maybe a year ago are very specific COVID, long COVID clinics, you know, both at Mayo and at MHealth Fairview, where you can go and really get very specialized treatment to help you with some of those longer term symptoms. So those are some things that didn't exist, you know, you know, this time last year that I think are really fascinating.
Right. Well, that is NPR News senior reporter Catherine Richard joining us from Rochester this morning for a few minutes to get us up to date on what's going on. Thank you, Catherine, for your time.
You are welcome, Angela.
Now, let's talk about the impact of COVID-19 on Hmong Minnesotans. The Minnesota Department of Health tracks COVID-19 cases by broad racial groups, but not specific ethnic categories. So it's hard to measure the extent of the impact of COVID on Hmong people, but it is clear that COVID has hit the Hmong community hard. One recent report found that Hmong people accounted for half of the deaths in Minnesota among Asians who died of COVID-19 in 2020, even though they represent just over a quarter of the Asian population in our state. Let me bring in our guest. We have on the line right now Chow Yang, and Chow is a senior health educator for St. Paul Ramsey Public Health, founder of the Hmong Public Health Association, and a student in the Executive Public Health Administration and Policy Program at the University of Minnesota. Good morning to you, Chow.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining us. Also on the line, we have Dr. David Tao. And Dr. Tao is the chair of the Hmong Medical Association and a plastic surgeon there in Woodbury who has been extensively involved in COVID-19 education and outreach in local and national Hmong communities. Good morning to you, Dr. Tao.
Good morning, Angela. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for your time. And to our listeners, as I talk with our guests now, I want to hear from you too. I want to know, how is the pandemic not over for you? Does worry and grief still linger in your family, in your community? And how? We do especially want to hear from our Hmong listeners today. The number is 651-227-6000. Again, the phone lines are open. You can call us at 651-227-6000 or leave me a message on Twitter at Angela Davis NPR. So Chow, I know you worked on a report that found Hmong people in Minnesota were much more likely to die of COVID-19 than several other Asian groups in the state. And we'll talk about some of the reasons in just a moment. First, I just want to hear from you, what has it been like to live in a tight-knit community where it is very common, unfortunately, to know someone who has died of COVID?
Well, thank you for that question, Angela. I think the Hmong community is essentially very communal in nature. And so, you know, pre-COVID, my weekends are spent with my cousins, my brothers, and my extended family. And during 2020 in February, when COVID was declared a pandemic, that all came to a halt very abruptly. And there was a certain degree of confusion. There was fear, widespread fear. And then there were also segments of our population that just disregarded the issue altogether. And so I think early in March and May and April, we started to hear about the Hmong community being affected. I think there seemed to be, as a frontline public health educator, it seemed that it was just this never-ending line of community members. Mm-hmm. And I remember being on phone calls, I think every day of the week, with community members who were crying because they were afraid, who were scared because they had a family member who lived in their house who had contracted COVID. We had people who worked in meat processing plants, manufacturing plants, who were calling us afraid to go back to work. And so for the Hmong community, because we were so tied together and so communal, and mm-hmm. we have deep relationships with each other, it was very difficult to experience that. And there seems to be some level of relief, and yet at the same time, there isn't.
Right, because there's been loss.
Yes.
And were there days, you know, in the last year where you just didn't even want to go to perhaps maybe your your Facebook feed or go on social media because, you know, you wondered if you'd hear about someone else in the community who was very ill?
I think there were days. There were days on my social media feed where I didn't want to look, but I couldn't stop myself because I wanted to know what was going on. I wanted to be in community with my people, with my friends, with my neighbors. And so as much as it was painful and difficult and challenging, I continued to plug in because as a Ramsey County public health educator, I was also responsible for disseminating resources and information. And so it's something that I couldn't just turn off.
Dr. Tao, how do you describe what you've been through personally during the pandemic? What has the last year been like for you?
Well, it's been challenging. At the same time, it's been very rewarding to be given the opportunity to where the position I am as a physician to be able to offer feedback and help and to provide that voice to the community. So, you know, it's challenging, as Chao has mentioned, that we have personally faced a lot of loss because our community is very small. And it's very common to hear from a lot of my colleagues and friends who are non-Hmong and say that, I don't know anyone personally that have died from COVID, where for me personally, I know, 10, 15 people personally that have died, young family, friends to older family and friends, So it's very, it's very devastating and it's hard on any person. But as a physician, I felt that it was very important for us to kind of fight this together and to really unite the community. As what Chao was saying, there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of miscommunication. And it was our job to really kind of put those information together for the community to kind of help benefit them to be safe from this pandemic.
So Chao mentioned two things, multi-generational homes and also the type of employment working in plants and factories. And so as a doctor, can you talk more about like how that played out with a virus that was spreading, in a respiratory way?
Right. So, I mean, no one could have predicted the devastation that the pandemic caused on the world and particularly to the Hmong community. In the early stages of COVID, as a doctor, the most important recommendation we had was prevention and minimizing the spread of the virus. We wanted to educate the community about COVID, echo the guidelines of what the CDC had recommended about hand washing, social distancing, mask. And we wanted to target the community because the community was at higher risk of what we mentioned earlier, that we're such a tight community. Everything we do, being Hmong is about family, is about being together. It's about sharing the joys and tribulations of life together. So that itself, that strength of the being Hmong became sort of a risk for the virus. And that's why when we talked about social distancing for the community, it was difficult because this was a concept that was a little bit different than what we're used to growing up with, being together.
Right. And as chair of the Hmong Medical Association, what has been your role in trying to support the community here, to get information out and to encourage people to get vaccinated? I mean, what could you do, or what has the association been able to do?
Right. So the Hmong Medical Association is an association of physicians, not only in the United States, but in other countries as well, Hmong physicians. And basically, we want to promote and support events, health, wellness, medical education, advocacy, and community service to the community. So as that is our mission, we felt that it was important to really grasp, COVID in the beginning stages and get this information early to the community, as there's always been health inequity. That's why we started, Hmong Medical Association. That's why we wanted to become a doctor in the first place. We wanted to help the community, help kind of bridge the gaps between this misunderstanding of Western medicine and what Hmong perception of illness will be. And our role was to really just have to re-educate and reinforce, these education and prevention. And that was the most important part of the spread, because at that time we didn't have all the knowledge we have about the medications and vaccines that we have now. All we had, you know, the knowledge of at that time was education, prevention, and what to do if you're sick and what are the things you need to take care of. So we kind of talked a lot about different things that impacted the community, different things that how COVID would impact children, adults, to our elders, to mental health issues, to all of that aspect that you know, that COVID would impact the community. So we really targeted initially the older generation, because we felt that they were, one, at higher risk, and two, they had a harder time finding out the information, finding out getting the resources to really understand what COVID was about. So we wanted to target the elderly, and we went about that through different social media platforms to really target that, to really get that information dispersed to them.
And Chow, have you found that there is a distrust of the medical community and of doctors among people here in Minnesota?
Yeah, I think there is a certain level of medical mistrust, and there's also this barrier, this language and medical literacy barrier as well, right? So it's not just one particular aspect that contributes to mistrust of medical or healthcare systems. It's a more complex issue.
And I want to know more about this report, Chow, that you worked on. It was released in April. It was done with the Coalition of Asian American Leaders and the Hmong Public Health Association about COVID-19's impact on Minnesota's Asian community. What did you discover in that work?
Well, I think there were a few points that really caught the public's attention, right? Which was this idea or this fact that the Hmong American community was disproportionately affected by COVID, and we were dying at rates that were too high for the part of this, the population segment that we make up. And so that's one piece of it. But I think for the most part, the report confirmed what Hmong people already knew, right? We knew that from week to week that our community members, our aunts, our uncles, our cousins were being deeply affected and they were getting sick, that we knew people that were dying. And the report for the Hmong community was more so validation than it was brand new news, as it was to other non-Hmong community members. And so in addition to that, we also found that 40% of the Hmong American COVID deaths were people between the ages of 20 and 65. So that was really different from the dominant, you know, narrative where, you know, only the elderly were being impacted and that they were dying from COVID. And I think being a Ramsey County employee, the piece that really was crucial was that many of the Hmong American COVID-19 related deaths in Minnesota were in the city of St. Paul.
And so I'm reading some notes I have about the report. I think I mentioned earlier, just over a quarter of the state's Asian people are Hmong, but they represented nearly half of the deaths due to COVID. The report identified 223 Asian people who died of COVID-19 between March and December of 2020 and found that 110 came from the Hmong community. Can you tell me more about that or what you take from that?
I think something that I mentioned earlier was that there are layers upon layers of complex cultural, social, economic, political reasons that contributed to this disproportionate death rate for the Hmong community. And some of those things are people who live in multi-generational housing. So in the Hmong community, it's very normal for grandparents to live with their sons and daughters and multiple grandchildren. Mm. And what that means is that when one person gets sick, if there are 10 people under one roof in a three-bedroom, two-bathroom house, right, it is very unlikely that quarantining and prevention methods will be successful. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of difficulty with isolation in the Hmong American environment. Many of our gatherings, like funerals and weddings, are communal in nature. And it's not just the event that is communal in nature. It is the processes and the rituals leading up to a funeral or a wedding that is communal in nature. You know, Hmong weddings generally, traditional Hmong weddings are 3 days. And funerals are also 3 days. And that is an extended period of time where a large group of people come together. And I wanted to add that the Hmong funeral guidelines did not come out to the public until November of 2020, when a significant number of Hmong people had already died. There was quite a bit of misinformation around home remedies, and this goes back to the mistrust of the medical professionals and healthcare systems, is that a lot of our elders would overtly say, yes, I'll go to the doctor, and then turn around and take herbal remedies instead.
Mm. So that's something you heard frequently about trying herbal remedies, home remedies to address COVID?
Yes. And I'm going to be quite honest. Like, I was offered herbal remedies from my mother. Right? And so it's a very real experience. And then there's the language barriers, being able to translate even the word virus, gammo, to the Hmong community, and really being able to explain what public health is to the Hmong community. Mm-hmm. They always assume, like, if you work in the health field, you must be a doctor. But, we are in the business of doing population health work, and it was difficult to even have the Hmong community understand what public health is.
I want to pass. I want to pass along a comment as we talk about COVID-19, where we are right now in Minnesota, and what we know about the impact of the virus on the Hmong community, Hmong Minnesotans. The number to call, because I do want to hear from our listeners as well as we talk with two guests, is the number to call is 651-227-6000. And the question is, how is the pandemic not over for you? Because we're still getting new cases, but we're also still dealing with grief and worry because of the losses that have been suffered, the deaths. Does worry and grief still affect your family, your community, and how? And we do especially want to hear from our Hmong listeners. The phone lines are open. Call us at 651-227-6000. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, MPR. And Dr. Tao, I want to pass on a question from a caller earlier who wanted to address this. This caller says, it's important to talk about the gatekeepers in communities of color. How do the handful of Hmong doctors, like Dr. Tao, use their power? Are they distributing vaccines equitably or using it to bolster their influence and client base within this insular community?
That's a great question. It's unfortunate that we don't have enough doctors. So we are in a privileged position that there are only a handful of us, and we feel that it's very important to do as much as we can to help the community. And what we do is basically I am Hmong. I love my community, and being growing up in this country and being the person I am is because of my cultural background, because I am Hmong. And so it helps me to understand myself and my other physician colleagues to deliver that message to the community that COVID is something dangerous, and that COVID is something that can affect our community, which it has. And it was our priority to really educate that and spread that message to the community. It was hard. It was very difficult because the remedy that we talked about was social distancing in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for that concept for the Hmong community to grasp that. We had to tell the community that it was okay to not go to a family event. It was as heartbreaking as it is, it was okay to not go to the funeral, because before that was a no. You could
unheard
not.
Of.
You had to go.
Right.
Yeah, it was unheard of.
Absolutely.
You had to show up, otherwise, it's you'd be dead.
Right. It's not an option.
And so, exactly. It's not an option. So now we have to say, let's rethink this. It's okay. You have to protect yourself if you want to protect your family. So we have to say that that was something that was fine to do. You don't have to celebrate now. You can celebrate later. We had to ask the community to rethink some of our traditions, rethink some of our rituals and process, as what Chow said, to kind of create this a new guideline to say, okay, instead of 3-day funerals, 3-day weddings, why can we shorten this down to a day, half a day, for the sake of the community, for the sake of being a super spreader event? Let's do this, you know, in the short term, and maybe this is good for the long term as well. So we had to kind of open that to the community to really rethink about, you know, what's important for now, and how can we be safe and help our family.
And does the phrase super spreader event, does that even translate? I mean, how do you describe what that means in a different language?
Exactly. It's very difficult because every event is a super spreader event in the Hmong community, technically, you know. So, you know, and to tell the community member that you can't have any of these is very difficult.
Before we take a news break, I wanted to bring in one of our listeners. We do have a phone call I want to get to before we go to news. As we talk about the impact of COVID-19 on Hmong Minnesotans, on the line right now, we have Zhang Yia in Brooklyn Park. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Hi. What did you want to share with us?
Yes, I appreciate this discussion, and this is my thanks for this problem here. Mm-hmm. I think the Hmong community have more underlying health issues pertaining to high blood pressures or other underlying issues, mm-hmm. and because of the lack of health clinic that is accessible to the Hmong people, especially the elder people, mm-hmm. That in the community that we should have. So, you know, my recommendation would be having clinics that is close by, like for example, if our town or places that where most of Hmong people live.
Right. So that's Zhang Yia there in Brooklyn Park asking about the availability of community clinics. And Chow Yang, you're there at St. Paul Ramsey Public Health. What can you tell us about, you know, access to community clinics for Hmong Minnesotans?
Well, Ramsey County, we're in the midst of a major effort to eliminate disparities by boosting vaccinations in neighborhoods where the percentage of our the population being vaccinated is lower than the overall rate for the county as a whole. And so something that we've done is we've included opening a new vaccination clinic site at Arlington Hills Community Center from Sundays from 12 noon to 4 p.m., as well as several new pop-up clinics with partners, with community partners at various events. And more information is available on our vaccine page on our county website at ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine. But that's not it. As part of this larger effort, our research, which is our racial equity and community engagement response team, is also engaging with COVID-19 trusted cultural community messengers and connectors in order to get them connected and overcome barriers to vaccination. And that could include some forms of, you know, health education work as well.
Right now, we're discussing the COVID-19 pandemic and how the deadly virus impacted Hmong Minnesotans in particular. My guests today include Chow Yang, a senior health educator for St. Paul Ramsey Public Health, founder of the Hmong Public Health Association, and who is currently pursuing a master's degree in the Executive Public Health Administration and Policy Program there at the University of Minnesota. Also, we have Dr. David Tao on the line. He is the chair of the Hmong Medical Association, as well as a plastic surgeon in Woodbury who's been extensively involved in COVID-19 education and outreach in local and national Hmong communities. And we're taking your phone calls. We want to hear from you. How is the pandemic not over for you? Do you still worry, and are you still grieving? How has it affected your community, and how? We want to hear especially from our Hmong listeners today. The number is 651-227-6000. And let's take a phone call right now in St. Paul, where Terry is on the phone. Hi, Terry. What did you want to share with us?
Hi, Angela. Thanks for having me on. I wanted to point out that I appreciated the talk about funerals and the communal living, but something that is also true in our community is a number of our people are essential workers, right? And where they work, the Hmong community, there's a high number of people who work in manufacturing, and they were the younger people who would come home to their families and get them sick, and because they didn't have a choice. I mean, that it, there's an issue of economics here, too, that we haven't necessarily talked about. And so, but for a number of people, that's the case, especially younger people who didn't go to college or didn't have other opportunities.
And Terry, and wanted, to be clear, are you Hmong, Terry?
Yes, I am.
You are. Okay. And we've also been talking about like the large family gatherings. And what have you seen with that in, over the past year?
I saw that some people did stop, but some people didn't. And even large was like relative, right? I'm one of six. That's still, even if all six siblings and kids and spouses get together, it's, that's still a lot more people than what the governor's recommendation was, right? And so so some folks stopped altogether. Some folks still continued. And in particular, some of our young people think that it didn't impact them as much. So they were still out going out with their friends. And it was quite unfortunate. So it varied across different age groups, too.
And may I ask, have you had to attend a funeral over the past year, Terry?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I just went to one this weekend of a local leader who died of COVID. And there's still, you know, people are still catching it in the community. And so while I appreciate efforts, actually, my mother-in-law was vaccinated through the medical association's community clinics. I think there's still a lot of worry, right? And so because particularly our folks still have to go to work every day.
And with the loss and the grief, you know, what can you say about the mental health impact that you have seen among Hmong Minnesotans?
You know, it's been devastating because it was, you know, we're a community that because we have a lot of elders, we're used to rates of loss. We also have a lot of illnesses, as the caller said, you know, people who have, you know, high blood pressure. So we're used to hearing stories about strokes. I think the scale of it has been pretty devastating. It's not just taken local leaders, but some national leaders. Dr. Ku Yang, who was a renowned Hmong scholar in the Hmong community, died of COVID. So it meant it, regardless of class, even if you were educated or not, there was still a high probability you would have caught it. And that's been really devastating for us to think of all the history and the stories, not just from our elders, but from also the professionals.
And does it, at times, Terry, does it feel like that other people that you interact with, that it feels like that they maybe are moving on? They feel like the pandemic is something in the past, but, you know, in your community, in your circle of friends and family, it's still very present.
It is, and it's, but I will say, because of the history of, for good or bad, of Hmong resiliency, we will accept this. We will continue to be very sad. I mean, I think it adds to the overall sorrows that in my community we're just used to feeling all the time. Mm. You know, sorrows still from the war and surviving as a people.
Mm. Well, thank you. That's Terry in St. Paul calling in. And Chao, what did you hear and what she had to share?
I know Terry, so and a lot of what she said resonates. You know, I've had the most difficult experiences during this pandemic. I was there. I'm still in there. You know, among the grief of, you know, community members, friends, and families. My Ying clan leader died this year. Tosing Saishua, yeah. He was our. You know, I am a daughter of the Ying clan. And so losing my clan leader was difficult because like Terry said, we lost, you know, a lot of collective wisdom, vibrancy, and the life and lives, and it was gone in an instant. And so I know we hear the relief and we see some things transition back to normalcy. I hear the optimistic news and statistics. But it's still very fresh to me personally, too, because my stepbrother, Gutunu Shi Ying, died just a little more than a week ago of COVID.
I'm so sorry.
And it reminds me of what someone said to me. It's like the end of a war when the ceasefire is called, right? And like a few lives are still, you know, caught in the middle. And my stepbrother already had one vaccination shot and he was awaiting his second vaccination shot. He just happened to be caught in the tail end of that ceasefire right? And so it's still very raw to me.
And Dr. Tao, you're a plastic surgeon there in Woodbury, in addition to the work that you're doing as chair of the Hmong Medical Association. Are you seeing a difference in how people view the pandemic at this point? For some folks, they feel like, oh, we're past it, I'm moving on, and other folks are still stuck because they just lost someone.
It's very difficult to move on. there's definitely a hope. The pain of losing someone close to you is never easy. I mean, sometimes it's very overwhelming. And throughout our process, I've interviewed many family members who have lost their loved ones due to the COVID. What I hear is always a constant theme that like grieving takes time. I mean, you can't change the past, but you can continue to celebrate the life of your loved ones by living your life to the fullest with the memories that they left behind. And I just want to tell everyone that there continues to be hope, because I believe in hope. The pandemic was, like we talked about earlier, reliving the war for some of our community members. Mm-hmm. Families were separated. You could not see each other. Many of our loved ones, like our families and friends, died during the pandemic. However, mm-hmm. It's the strength of our community. It's our resilience and our desire to kind of survive and be better. That's what's holding us together. And even with our elderly members kind of dwindling down and dying, the future, I feel, is hopeful because of the younger generation. That's why we really try to encourage the young generation and everyone else to continue being safe, continue to get their vaccination, to encourage vaccination, because there is vaccine inequity, and we want to make sure everybody gets that opportunity, and when given the opportunity, to take that opportunity to get vaccinated.
And I think about people, folks who follow news headlines very closely. The Hmong community has lost several important leaders to COVID-19, both younger people and elders. I think of some of the, the stories I've seen just the last few months. The names that come to mind, Marnie Zhang, who was the chairwoman of the St. Paul School Board, died, it was almost a year ago, in June of 2020, after falling ill with COVID-19. She was just 31. Another educator, Chua Lee Yang, the co-founder of a charter school in Brooklyn Park, died at the age of 53 in October. Tufu Vang of Woodbury died on Thanksgiving Day. He was 76, a respected elder, leader, and a veteran of the secret war. And then just last month, Eileen Herr, the first Hmong woman to pass a bar exam in Minnesota and the first Hmong woman to be appointed to being a University of Minnesota regent, died of COVID-19 complications, and she was 52. And these are just some of the deaths. So what kind of holes do these people leave in the community? Because they are people that many folks knew and looked up to and were role models. Chow?
It's such a great loss, and it's so difficult to even convey, right, the impact of these folks, of our people, because not only have we lost community members, but we're losing people who hold a lot of wisdom and history that has not been imparted to the rest of the community. And we, as a young Hmong person, there is a deep reverence for our elders. You know, we also have a strong oral tradition, and history is not particularly written down for us. And so, without the living, breathing person there to orally tell us the stories, we've lost so much. We've lost the stories. We've lost that vibrance. And it is really heartbreaking and earth-shattering. And, you know, the pandemic has just been moving at such a quick pace that there's this numbness and this grief and this mourning that needs to be unpacked, that needs to be processed still. And that is going to take some time.
I want to take another phone call as we talk about the impact of COVID-19 on Hmong Minnesotans in Minneapolis. Robin is on the phone. And Robin, what did you want to share with us?
So I'm a family doctor in North Minneapolis. I'm also tech not savvy, and so I'm trying to get off speakerphone without hanging up and not succeeding.
I can hear you.
Mm-hmm. I take care of mostly Hmong patients. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to add to this conversation is that as healthcare systems shut down for telemedicine and to address COVID at the beginning, it was set up to take care of patients like me, born in the United States, speak English, have easy access to technology, and not people who look like my patients, my Hmong patients, because everything went to the computer. And the computer is not accessible. And I just wonder how many extra deaths we saw because patients could not get the care they needed because we have a healthcare system that prioritizes people who speak English well, can navigate technology well, can send computer messages in English to their providers. Mm-hmm. And it's heartbreaking to me to think who we might have lost that we could have saved had we, if we had a healthcare system that really addressed the needs of the whole population and not aimed primarily at the white middle class.
And Robin, did you lose contact with some of your Hmong patients during the pandemic? Have you?
My clinic, we have a community clinic, mm-hmm. and we got approval to continue doing healthcare over the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually saw patients from, saw sometimes in person, we also did not close completely, saw in person or over the phone patients from other healthcare systems who my patients would say, my cousin has something going on and can't access their healthcare. And I think as we recover from this pandemic and look at how to prepare for the next one, we really have to consider how to be accessible to all patients and not just those who are easy to be accessible to.
Thank you. That's Robin in Minneapolis, a healthcare provider, a family doctor who cares for Hmong patients. And Dr. Tao, what can you say about that? How telehealth, how accessible that was to Hmong Minnesotans?
Right. That's definitely a great point. The whole process, basically they boil down to health inequity, right? Health inequity is the issue that the caller, Dr. Robin was talking about. And that equates to vaccine inequity as well. That's why we really, the only way, Angela, to really target the community was we had to go directly to the community. That's what the caller Robin was talking about, that we would lose all these patients because of telehealth, because they had a lot of barriers to overcome. There was technology barrier, language barrier, transportation barriers, and seeing your doctor, you had to overcome all of that for telehealth. Not only that, in terms of vaccine, they had to overcome all of that to get vaccinated. So the only way as physicians that we felt that we could reach the community was we had to go directly to them. We had to work through the community to reach the most vulnerable, because that vaccinating the community required active outreach, teaching the community about COVID symptoms and treatments required, active outreach to the community. We had to directly engage them by bringing the vaccine to them, bringing the vaccine to a place that they know, giving it to them by people that they trust. That's why we really, from the get-go in February, really organize these vaccine clinics to really reach out to the people that couldn't get the vaccines. I mean, I'm a plastic surgeon. We have several doctors and lawyers in our family, and we couldn't even sign my parents up to get the vaccine. I mean, imagine the Hmong families that don't have that advantage. It would be impossible. So we felt that this is the only way to do it. Is we couldn't wait. We couldn't wait for other pharmacies to open up and they would go, because there was not enough time. So we had to kind of get involved and get our hands dirty and do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, our time has come to an end now, as we've talked about how Hmong Minnesotans have been affected by COVID-19. And I want to thank our two guests. We've been talking to Chow Yang, a senior health educator for St. Paul Ramsey Public Health and founder of the Hmong Public Health Association, and Dr. David Tao, chair of the Hmong Medical Association, as well as a plastic surgeon there in Woodbury who's been very involved in COVID-19 education and outreach. Thank you to both of our guests and to our listeners who phoned in as well. Be safe, everyone. This conversation was produced by NPR's Maya Beckstrom.
Hi, I'm Angela Davis, and you just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet me at Angela Davis NPR. If you missed us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.